is up, bro? You're here.
You know, I feel fortunate to be here as part of this this fine extravaganza that you call a podcast.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate that more than you know. Yeah, yeah. That's the way we met was amazing over well, through Amber and then through at Manny's party and everything. Mm-hmm. But you had been somebody I'd seen, man, for years, and everybody knows who you are, everybody. But I want to start with you as a kid. Okay. Right, and like where you grew up, mm-hmm. and so just kind of give me the rundown there.
Yeah, I was very fortunate to have a childhood that, unfortunately, many youth will not have in today's day and age, and they've heard about it, and we who have lived it talk about it ad nauseum because such great memories. The times when you could walk to the school, to the park. There was no cell phones. You didn't worry about nothing. Your parents didn't know where you were going, didn't care where you were going, because everybody felt safe about everything. So my mom was born in England, and she married my dad, who was a paratrooper in the 82nd Airborne during the Second War. And she was a nurse's assistant in outside of London. And they met. They came back to the United States, did the deed, and here I am.
And that's it.
Something I can't imagine, but...
Yeah.
You know, nobody can imagine their parents.
I mean, they probably didn't imagine what they just birthed either, right? They were like, oh, God dang.
If they were still alive, they'd be so proud. Did your son grow up to be a doctor, a lawyer, a scientist? No, he grew up to be super parent.
No, I think it's great. I think it's great. So, wait, where'd you grow up?
In Lorain, Ohio. Very, very modest means. Our house was probably smaller than most apartments. The kitchen, you could put your arms out and touch the walls on both sides. It was pretty. But we didn't know that we were, when I say lower middle class, I mean strictly financially, not morals, not in manners and all the things that really count. It was a very nice neighborhood to grow up in, and I feel very fortunate I was able to have the childhood that I did.
Okay, and then you went to Lorain. Did you go to high school out there as well and graduate out there?
Yeah, I went to Admiral King High School.
Okay.
And it was the best 8 years of my life.
And so you're a true Clevelander at that.
Yes, I've lived... I would say in actual living time, I've lived more in Cleveland, because after high school, I didn't live in Lorain anymore. And in case nobody noticed, I'm an hour or two over 25, so that was that was a little while ago.
But that's something that's also amazing about you, is you're like a fountain of youth for everybody. Mm. I had a conversation earlier today, and I was telling some people that I had you coming over here to do the podcast, and they're all laughing. They're like, man, we've known him forever. It's all age ranges, too. I mean, you have to remember that you resonate with tens of thousands of people around here, at least. I mean, that have seen you, that would recognize you anytime, and they go, that's super pimp, man. Yeah. You know?
It's a pretty amazing stuff. I keep thinking my 15 minutes is going to be up, and then it just kind of passes on to the next generation, because I'm normally in the entertainment sector, what I find is, like places like down here in the flats, the crowd changes about every 3 or 4 years. They find a girlfriend, or they think they're too old to come out anymore. So then the next 21-year-old and come in and fill the spots, and so it just seems to pass from one
generation to quite literally the next.
Well, for 3 or 4 years, not quite a generation, but yeah, the same principle. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so how did this start? Like, I got to know from the beginning. I mean,
well, the beauty of it was that I really had nothing to do with the whole thing. Practically zero. And what I mean by that is that just to go back to the background where I was emotionally and mentally at the time, I've always been a very upbeat, positive person my whole life. Been very fortunate to have good family, good friends, and good health. So there's no reason not to be positive. But then I went through a real bad period, probably around 99. And that's not 1899, that's 1999, where a lot of things hit me all at once. Life smacked me around pretty good. And for the first time in my life, I went into a really bad depression. And I wasn't able to see my daughter as much as I wanted to. Her mom and I were never married, so I only got to see her once every 2 weeks. That killed me. That's a travesty for fathers. But
that's how I grew up. That's how I grew up as well. But my dad was doing a lot of cocaine, so I kind of get it. You know what I mean? But yeah, that's I can tell you firsthand that's hard to grow up like that. But yeah, continue.
So what happened was I fell into this really bad funk, and a lot of people wouldn't probably believe this of me, but I was living. I had moved to Alliance to be with closer to my then girlfriend, and we broke up. And all this other stuff hit me. And if it was just a breakup, that wouldn't have done it. It was mostly not seeing my daughter and deeply emotional things like that. And so what happened was I was ended up living in a trailer that I spent $1,200 for in some broken down lot in Alliance, Ohio. And I didn't have any furniture in there. I had about 5 blankets on the floor. And a radio, and a little radio, and in the wintertime, it was mostly in the wintertime, that time period, and I couldn't afford to turn the propane on. The only time I turned the heat on is when my daughter came for her 2 week, and she was about 3 or 4 at that time.
Yeah, so you're just trying to make it work at this point.
Yeah, I was in a funk.
What were your days looking like, if you don't mind me asking? Because I've been through like super hard depression as well.
I slept until. I didn't get off of those blankets, because that was my bed, was those 5 blankets on the floor. And I was on the floor until 6 o'clock every night, except for when I got up in the morning and I listened to Howard Stern on the radio when he was still free. And so that was my day until 6 o'clock. And it was funny because I would still go out. And nobody would ever know what I was going through. It was because of a friend of mine that would always come and get me and say, come on, you need to go out. And so I would go out. Then after a period of time, after 5 or 6 months, my daughter came for a regular visit. And I saw this look in her eye. And it was a different look than I'd ever seen from her before. It was like going from a small child and how a small child's brain works to her actually analyzing me as a person. And I'm thinking to myself, you know what a miserable piece of crap example you are of a father, even though I never missed a 2-week visit to come and see her.
Of course.
But still, here I am just not, I'm so far from my best to try to give the best example to my daughter. I said, that's it. I'm done. I looked in the mirror and I said, you talk about who you are. It's time for you to pull up your drawers and show who you are and get out of this and get to doing what you're supposed to be doing. And then I started out to be the who I always was, but on steroids because of what I had been through.
Yeah, absolutely. It makes you a lot stronger. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really interesting space to sit in. When I wanted to touch on like the Ohio court systems with that.
Yeah, okay.
Because, you know, my parents got divorced in 01. My stepdad, my mom never got married to him, but it's technically not my stepdad. My stepdad, she's with now, my mom's ex-boyfriend, he also got divorced in like 2000, 2001, right around there. My mom, I think, probably tried to take everything from my dad for the most part, but my dad was a piece of shit and it real hard. Right, like he was drinking all the time, doing coke all the time, being a mess all the time. Now my stepdad, like she went after just all of his money, took the kids, and then like just a couple years ago, this bitch took his pension.
Oh,
and he was a cop for like 20 some years. Yeah, and I'll tell you what, like the Ohio, that's what's amazing about the court system though, like that they'll just like after, you know, after being divorced for 2-3 times as long as they were ever married.
Right.
That you can just come back and say, you know what, because I was married to you back in this time, pony up half that pension.
It's travesty.
So, yeah, it's a travesty, and that's the same thing with the court system with women. They automatically award women custody. They automatically award women everything that they want, unless, of course, there's an underlying issue. Right. But yeah, man, I would love to see some change there, especially because you see these, a lot of these good people, these good dads getting dragged through the mud. And I agree that the shitty ones should remain without their kids and every other weekend with supervised visits. I get when that occurs, but
when you're deemed to be clean and involved and want to be a parent, with all the deadbeats, moms and dads, that they have to chase around to become what they should be to their children, and that's parents, and somebody who's volunteering, because I had to bring, I brought the court case myself because, and I don't want this to sound like I'm bad-mouthing her mom.
Yeah, of course.
But, you know, we were all going through our own things, and so I don't want to...
There's a lot of emotion at that time. Exactly. We understand. We know what you're talking about. Nobody thinks the Super Pimp's a bad guy. Yeah. So we know you're not out there dogging him. He's out there rog-dogging him in court, though, boy. I'll tell you what. You know it.
So she had the idea that she was just going to take off with our child when she was 18 months old and just forget that I ever existed. Oh, no. No, that ain't going to happen. I said, you're going to go through men in your life.
Yeah.
But there's one thing that is not going away, and that's me as her father, and I will always be there.
That's so important. Yeah. That's so important.
And so I had to take it. I had to take her to court, and I didn't have money for a lawyer at the time. So I went to the library, studied the law books, found out how to file the motions, how to get temporary custody, or I should say what they call interim, which means I get to see her certain times while they're making the final determinations. I did all that paperwork. I appeared in court, treated me like I was dirt.
Isn't that crazy? That's the worst part. They treat you like you're shit.
No, absolute dirt. As a matter of fact, well, the judge, who was the Cleveland judge at the time, one of the juvenile court judges, has been disbarred since then, but he was a real piece of crap.
Was he really?
And so me and he would sit there and talk to, ask questions to mom. Mom was very pretty, mm-hmm. and young and pretty. And she said, well, you know, Bonnie, how are your, how was this happened? And what happened here? It just all sing-song and easy questions and everything. And she would kind of trash me. And then I would wait for him to come to me and say, well, now it's your turn.
Yeah.
No, just went right on. I said, wait a minute. I said, I brought this hearing. This is my hearing to be a part of my child's life. I said, that might mean nothing to you because you see these cases all the time. I whipped open my briefcase and I had a big old picture of my daughter. I said, this is who we're dealing with, just so you remember who it is and not just another piece of paper going across your desk. And so him and I got to so heated because he was an egotist, and he got so heated between us that I charged the bench.
Really?
And the bailiff came in between us, and...
Dang, that was a mess. I bet.
It got ugly real quick, and so that was... I finally got my visitation rights, and I established my paternity, which were the two things that I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So that was my first and hopefully only session with the court that's supposed to be in the best interest of the people.
Right. Yeah, see, I think that you when you go through the court systems like that, I remember my dad feeling the same way, you know, like there was just no hope, you know, nothing that he did was right. It felt like you were constantly under attack by that system. And I don't know where that started with the women, but I really hope it changes eventually because – it kind of leads into like why marriage, there's no appeal for men anymore to get married. You know, like even for me, like a single dude doing well, why the fuck would I want to marry some girl who has nothing to offer? They're just going to take my money. You know what I'm saying? Like my son, my dog and I, we're just going to hang out right here. You know what I'm saying? Y'all can come over and say what's up, but that's as far as it's going to go.
You know who Bill Burr is?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Bill Burr, I think, said it the best. He said, if you thought... you were going to jump out of an airplane and 50% of those parachutes weren't going to open. Were you going to jump?
Yeah, of course not. Of course.
And he said, "And oh, it's just a line over here to take half my stuff? Let me get in. Oh, one step closer."
That's so funny because it's so true. It's so true. And and a lot of women that you go out with nowadays too, man, all they want to do is drink for the majority, right? And I'm not talking, listen, I'm not out here dating 21-year-old mm-hmm. girls. That's not what's going on. I always date women older than me now. It's just this thing. But still, man, everybody's their whole vice is just drinking all the time. You know, there's no healthy habits. So I've been trying to dive into some more healthy habits. I still drink sometimes, but it's definitely a tough dating scene out here, man. Unless you're a fucking pimp. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Unless you're a fucking pimp.
Then you know better.
Yeah. Then you know better. Yeah.
You know what the pitfalls are.
Pimp hands strong, dude.
Well, the problem is that, you know, that there's a lot of women that used to be good women, and let me clarify that before I get in trouble with it, that were very good women who were honestly looking for a good man, wanted to settle down and be everything that they were supposed to be.
Right.
But there was a lot of men out there who ruined them, promised them everything in the world just to get what they wanted, took their emotion, took their heart, took their soul, and then dumped them after they got what they want. So you get burned like that, it's hard to come back. And I think that's what's a problem with a lot of young women and a lot of good men who had the same thing happen to them, except from woman to man.
I feel like everybody's using each other for whatever it might be. Everybody needs that next lead. I feel like everything is kind of becoming a mini Los Angeles in that way, just because of social media, right? I feel like this is the way I describe it to people. I always tell them, because we spend so much time in L.A., that Los Angeles is like the human form of social media, right? It's like being within an app, right? Because you're seeing the craziest shit that you'd ever... It's L.A., right? And then you come out here and you have these like little satellites to it, right? And it's really interesting to watch that, because people get so engulfed with social media, and then you have, you know, your eyes are always somewhere else. So that's a frustrating thing, I think, being single. I don't think I'll ever date again. I always say that. I'm serious. I don't think I'll ever have a girlfriend again. I don't even look for that shit, bro.
It's very difficult, and that's the way it is with me. I look at it this way. I go out. I have a good time. I get attention from the opposite sex.
Yeah, you fucking kill it, dude. Save some pussy for the rest of us, dude. Jesus.
But I'm out, and I get all of that I need when I'm out. When I go home, that's my castle. I put up the drawbridge, I fill up the moat,
yep.
I put in the alligators, and I say, this is me in my holy underwear, and...
Oh, dude, could you imagine getting a camera inside Super Pimp's house? There's some weird things going on in there for sure, dude.
We all got weird things going on when people ain't around. Dude, I don't care who you are.
Dude, I throw concerts in my bedroom by myself, don't worry. We're all there, right? I swear. That shit's so funny. It never fails, man. They're always really good shows, too, I promise. but yeah, man, that's a touchy and an interesting topic because dating is crazy, and you don't have to comment on this, but I'm going to say something. So recently, and you've spent time, I'm sure, there at our boy Bobby George's restaurants and stuff like that. And innocent until proven guilty. That's how I see things.
Correct.
Until you know what's going on, you can't really judge. I'm going to still eat Town Hall. I'm going to still eat Rebel. It's some of the healthiest shit as far as restaurants go in the area. And that does not mean I support anything that he did or is being...
It's
you
not
know,
the employee's fault.
But that's what I wanted to talk to you about. It's not the employee's fault. And that's where I'm a little frustrated with everybody's reaction. It's like, oh, don't go here. Don't go there. Don't go. It's like, yo, that's fine. Then come up with a solution for all these people that he employs to work. Mm-hmm. You know? And so, because I'm a true believer, this is the way this is going to go down. This situation is going to go down as either other women are going to come out and say, this has also happened to me. And this is why I'll say that, because for years, people have been saying Bobby George this, Bobby George that. I've heard this. But no one's ever done anything. No one's ever said anything. You get some fucking little protesters outside on some whatever. They might as well, you know, is it Greta Thunberg sitting outside of his fucking house? Yeah. I don't know. Right. But he's got, you know. But no one ever like comes with charges, nothing real. You know, people get mad that he wants skinny girls at the restaurant. I get where that business plan is headed. Like, you're serving healthy food. You're not going to hire a 300-pound girl. I understand that.
Right.
I can appreciate that. Right. And I'm just blunt about it, though. Right. And but I don't think the employee should have to suffer because of his potential stupidity or him just getting absolutely railed in the ass by whoever this girl is.
The thing that's not going well for him is the fact that he's not very well liked. And that's because he's not, it's just his nature not to be a sociable person.
Yeah.
If I owned a club, I wouldn't want him to be the face of the club.
No.
He's a good businessman, he's smart, but as far as the social skills, a lot of people don't like him. They misunderstand him. I don't know what the real person is myself, but
I've tried to get him on the podcast before. I've talked to him quite a bit about it, and there's a lot of hesitation there for sure, right? For him to come on here, and I told him, I'm like, and same with you. I just tell this to everybody that I interview. I say, I'll edit out whatever you want to edit out. You say something you don't want in here, I will edit it out. I'm not here to make people look bad. Mm-hmm. I'm just here to make me look bad, dude. You know, and so that's like the interesting part about that. But yeah, there's a lot of hesitation when I asked him that. And then I kind of sent him a text the one day because I was like, listen, man, I was like, if you don't want to do the podcast, like, I totally get it. I understand. But just tell me no. Mm-hmm. Right. And I was like, I know you're busy. I'm busy, too. Whatever. And then it just never transpired, which I'm pissed about now. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I don't know. I struggle living in America and then not going innocent until proven guilty, because we truly live in a world where it is guilty until proven innocent in these situations.
Yeah, well, in most situations.
Yeah.
It seems that's the case.
And then you have the other side of that in Cleveland. So you have the Bobby George, who's, you know, going to go on trial for all these, you know, heinous acts. And then you have who I think is like the next thing in Cleveland, the next guy. And he doesn't want to be the next guy, I don't think. He's the most humble dude I probably ever met. You'd never know he owned any of the places if you walked past him on the street. He doesn't dress flashy. He's just a good dude, a phenomenal businessman. It's Bobby Rudder. And Bobby Rudder owns Forward Hospitality with you know, Forward, I Hate Cowboys, all these other ones. And that guy does a phenomenal job. And have you spent time at all these different bars? You know, and you get to see how they're ran and see how these different investors like those guys are bringing Cleveland back, right?
Right.
Bringing, especially the flats, right? You see that in the flats. So anyways, that leads me into, over the last, you know, 30, 40 years, you have seen the flats be the best they've ever been from what everybody says in the 90s to dead completely. And now we're here. So tell me about that for you, and how much time were you spending down here?
In the early days of the flats, the times of the Basement and Fagan's and all the great places that were down here at that time, I was spending a lot of time at places like O'Malley's on Brook Park Road, where all the in the 80s, where the wrestlers. Professional wrestlers, before they were making a lot of money, would stay in those little places like that.
Really?
So I'd party with them and the old 100 bomb squadron.
Oh yeah,
the airport.
Oh yeah.
That's where I met my baby's mama.
Yeah, your baby mama. Which one, boo? Which one? He don't even know about all of them, dude.
Well, see, the thing is, it worked once.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
I had two popsicle sticks and a rubber band.
Yeah. I mean, there's a rumor on the street after somebody comes up and gives you a hug, they're pregnant right away. So I don't know.
Please not.
Yeah. You got a couple of child support cases to fight now.
I mean, I love my daughter to death, but I went through
mm-hmm.
I went through all that. And that's what I warn the young guys. Because young guys always come up to me. They go, well, how do you stay happy all the time? I met you 10 years ago and you had that same smile on your face. How do you do that? I said, well, first of all, you have to understand where people make the mistake about happiness. They think by making themselves happy, that's going to give them happiness. But you buy a new car. If I buy that car, that's going to make me happy. Well, it gets you from point A to point B a couple times.
Yeah, you don't give a shit afterwards.
A new outfit, a couple of times, it's old news and everything. But if you take the time each and every day to make somebody else happy, to make somebody else smile, it fills your soul, and it brings to you a joy and happiness, let's say, that you can't buy at Walmart. And I'll make it a point. I'll go into like a dollar store or something like that, and that poor young lady is back there, or older woman who's trying to support herself all day long, going like this, click. And people complaining every once in a while, and never looking down. And I make it a point to say, you know, I really like that sweater.
Yeah, you're just here for the good vibes.
Yeah. They go from this to like a flower blossoming.
Yeah.
Like, you really think so?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, you look really nice today.
So you're good at reading personalities?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. You could tell. I could tell.
Like I said, I'm an hour or two over 25.
Yeah, but so. It's okay, but it's good. You could be an hour or two over 25, but you've taken the time to engage and learn.
Learning people, yes.
Yeah, that comes, of course, with a little bit over 25 years of experience, but... yeah, that's crazy, and you just have a vibe about you. So your true goal on a regular basis then is to just bring the best out of everybody.
Exactly.
And make somebody happy and just make them feel good and feel amazing.
And it's almost selfish because I feel like I get twice back just by their reaction and their happiness and to have changed their day. Because nobody's going to buy a ticket to hear me sing. They're not going to.
I would.
Or to play an instrument.
I would.
Oh, yeah.
I would. I would fucking buy that.
You'd be the first one in line.
That's
going,
fine.
I want my money back. And, my family lets me know that.
I would donate it to the next suit fund is what I would do. But you gotta think, though, too, is when you're making people that happy on a regular basis, as you have, it's one thing to do it a couple times. It's one thing to do it for a year or two. I mean, Super Pimp has been Super Pimp for how long? I mean, how many years?
It started in 99. It was at the official birth of Super Pimp. That was after the story I told about what I had gone through and when I had made a decision to get that negativity out of my life and get back to being who I really was.
And so the mentality you took at that particular point then was, I'm going to make other people happy. And where did you find the – so I'm just backtracking a little bit because I want to know where you found the strength or where you found that high, I call it, of making somebody else feel amazing, right? Like, what got you there? I know you said your friends were taking you out and stuff like that. Was there, like, a particular moment or, like, a span of nights where you're like, oh, this is
from
it?
From the depression to
– Yeah, to like – Yeah. Like, from your – yeah, from, like – from being like hardcore depressed, because I've been there before, right? Where you're hardcore depressed, you can't get out of bed, you could care less about anything but maybe having a drink, making yourself numb, right? Whatever it might be. But you go from that situation to slowly things are starting to happen for you, right? And what was that moment maybe necessarily where you're like, oh, that felt so good to make somebody else feel good?
I know the exact moment when I switched gears. And it's like I said earlier that when I saw that look in her eye, analyzing me as her father and not as just some person with her being as young as she was, not being able to ascertain who I was or what I was about, to say, then it's not about me. It's not about me wallowing in what I might be thinking or what's bothering me. That's the most important thing, and I need to get at it. I was kind of that way, you know, before all that happened, as far as wanting to make other people happy, because I had a happy childhood. My dad had 7 brothers and sisters who were all jewels of the earth.
Okay.
Just the kind of person you would want to be around all the time, that taught me how to live a real life. And that's like we were talking about earlier, about these people out here that are lost, the younger generation, because maybe they didn't have that guidance to have the examples of, these people are happy, and they've been happy for all their lives, aside from the usual things that can happen to you from time to time. But other than that, just being having well-adjusted children.
Fuck the motorcycles and the flats. I fucking hate all of you. I still hate those motorcycles, though. They drive me nuts, man.
Just a quick thing about that. I remember when I got a ticket for loud noise. I had my radio on too loud. It was a stock radio in the car. And it was 4:00 in the morning, and it was on the Manor Avenue, where all businesses that are closed. And the cop pulled me over and gave me a ticket. And then you see these motorcycles that come down that are just so noisy you can't hear yourself think.
They don't do anything.
Sometimes they don't do anything. That's okay noise level.
Well, you want to hear some shit the other night? So this is so funny. This goes to show you how fucking fake the world is, right? So the other night they had this big convention down here, and it's for people to send conventions to Cleveland, right? Mm-hmm. Or they had these a bunch of people in town that make decisions on who goes where for Cleveland or who goes where in the country for these big companies and their conventions, right, and stuff like that, right? So on like a super solid Friday night, right, you'll have three cop cars down here, maybe six cops, I would say total, right, that I see. I'd say that's probably pretty accurate, right? Dude, there were like fucking 15 cops here for, I would say, a tenth of the amount of people. And they were all just rented out. All the, like, Bobby's stuff was mm-hmm. open. You could tell that's where they were really headed. Mm-hmm. But I was laughing when I saw that because you had the sheriffs down here. You had the Cleveland police. They blocked off this entrance, this turnaround here.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, man, you guys are really pulling out all the stops. But why don't you do that every single weekend? You should pull mm-hmm. that out every single weekend for that same reason, for the safety down here. People are getting fucked up down here all the time.
Right. And that's what always bothered me. I have a lot of friends on the Cleveland police.
Yeah.
You know, they're basically good guys, and I don't know where their guidance comes from sometimes. I've seen when there's been trouble, like going back to the West 6th Street days of Barley House and Blind Pig, and when it was really hopping down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and everybody's down there mostly to have a good time, and then you got these troublemakers out there that are harassing women and causing fights and everything, and all they do is just kind of separate them. I said, you know, you're down there causing a disturbance, and it's against the law to do that. They need to be arresting some of those people, because if a guy wants to show up to his girlfriend and just, you know, start wailing on somebody, he knows nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
He's going to look good, and then they're going to separate him, and he's going to have no consequences. But it gets around that, hey, you start a fight, you're going to jail.
It's a different thing down here, though, for sure. And I think what it is probably overcrowding. And you would think it would happen more often down here, though, because they are, like, I mean, and it's not the police themselves. This is what I've noticed. It's not the actual cops. It's their superiors, and it's really the politicians, like the mayors and stuff like that, that are requiring you. They're not giving these people quotas, right? They're giving them, hey, listen, you didn't write enough tickets, right? It's a dollar amount, it seems like, okay? Which it really is a quota. No matter how you cut it, it's really a quota. But they don't structure it like that, right, of course, because that would be horrible for brass.
Right, and I want to reiterate that it's what I alluded to, that it was had to have been the leadership, because it. These are good guys out here. They do a dangerous job in what's potentially a dangerous city.
Yeah,
as most big cities have their spots where it can be. You're going out there, and I know it's kind of a cliche, but they're out there risking their lives every night.
You never know what you're going to run into in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's be real. East side of Cleveland's rough. There's parts of the west side that are super mm-hmm. rough, and then you got kind of the mix of in between. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you got to give it to the guys that strap up every day to go out there and mm-hmm. make that happen for us. Because this is where I always laugh. You could not like the cops for certain things, and I get that. But the second some shit hits the fan, guess who everybody's calling?
Right.
Right? So it's like you got to definitely have some respect and respect there. So I agree with that. Now, I wanted to then talk to about – so, like, Super Pimps Born, we're rocking now, okay? Is this – and I'm talking from then to now – like, how often are you going out? Are you drinking when you're going out? Kind of give me your rundown. Give me your setup from a night out with Super Pimp, from the time you're getting ready to the time, you know, is
it's showtime.
It's showtime.
And that's what it is. It's showtime.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's a ritual. You know, I start warming up on Wednesday night.
Oh, okay.
And I start to see what day is it. Today is Wednesday. That means it's only bop bop till Friday. But most weekends or most weeks, it's two nights a week. But when I'll have personal appearances that I make, and usually when I'm having a personal appearance, that's usually an hour, maybe 2 hours, and then I go out after.
Yeah.
But in the summertime, it might lean more towards three nights a week that I go out. But prior to that, back in when I said when this whole thing started, it was six nights a week.
Dang.
And I worked to show how dedicated I was and how much of a drug it was to me to come out and make people happy and give away the gifts that I was given. Like I was saying earlier about, you're not going to pay a ticket to hear me sing or play an instrument, but I I was given the God-given ability to make people smile and make them feel a little better about themselves and their day. So who am I to be selfish with that and not put that out there every chance that I can get? So I go out, I go through my ritual. Sometimes it's a game time decision, what suit I wear. Sometimes I got, for Tuesday, I've already made a decision.
Oh, you're ready. You're ready. How many suits do you have?
Active and inactive, between 75 and 100.
Wow. Wow. I mean, pimping ain't fucking easy, guys. Right. You know what I'm saying? You can't just walk out with two or three pieces, man. Yeah, you're going to be... You're running them bad boys dry real quick.
Because if you fall down, that's why pimping ain't easy. Somebody's going to try to take your corner.
Someone's going to try to take that shit, baby.
And while I'm saying my catchphrase, so to speak, something I wanted to clear up real quickly about that is that my sister is my moral compass. She's very conservative. She'd been married. She just had her 50th wedding anniversary, has six great-grandkids. Not great grandkids, but six kids that are really well adjusted and wonderful kids. And so she's my moral compass in the conservative side. She says, "You do charity work and you do this and that, and how are you, who's going to hire a pimp or with a name to pimp or something like that with a connotation?" I said, "Yeah, that's really a consideration that I have to make." But it was the fans from the beginning who did everything. Like I said, in the beginning, I had nothing to do with anything. It showed up on MySpace one day. Somebody started MySpace for me.
Oh,
I had no. I didn't know for 2 years who controlled it. I didn't even know what it was. I had almost 5,000 on MySpace before I even knew I had one.
No shit.
They would take pictures of me, and then other people would take pictures and send it in, and they would maintain it.
Were
like
you single at this time?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, you had to just be just floating in it, dude. Yeah, you just had to be swimming in the women, dude. Oh, my God. And I'm assuming, how old are you at this point? Like, when you're, 99 or so, like, what are you, like, 40s, 30s?
Well, how old was I then? Mm-hmm. I was probably in my late 40s.
Yeah. Touch of gray just for men. I bet you those women were eating that up.
Oh, it was pretty amazing. But I was brought up old school, and again, there's a couple things that tie into this, and trying to capsulize it as much as I can. There's young people come up to me all the time, like I was saying about, they ask me for my advice. They say, "Well, how come you're so happy? What's the key to happiness?" And what they're telling me is today's society and the way they were brought up and what was made to be important to them, like social media and artificial things like that, is just not working for them.
Right.
In any aspect of their life. When I say I was old school, it was a thrill to have a girl hold your hand. A thrill. It was...
You get them butterflies going, and you're, I know that. I haven't had that in so long, man. I miss that feeling. Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
That's right. Now, to get anywhere near that same feeling, which doesn't last, you got to have a couple of monkeys and a trapeze.
Man, you better, too.
And hope that you're going to get the same kind of thrill, but you never do get the same satisfaction. So they say, a lot of them will say, I wish I was born in your era. I was born too late. I would rather be.
Yeah.
And I think that there is a movement back towards that old school mentality of morals, because it's just not working for people. They're just not happy. That's why you have so much crime and young people running the streets, and because there was no morality back then. There was morality. You pulled up in front of the girl's house and you trembled, knowing that you were going to meet the father,
man,
at the front door,
right?
And that he was going to give you the once over, and you better be upstanding.
Yeah,
because I was that way with my daughter. They got the third degree when they.
Yeah, no, when I believe it. Yeah, house. No, I mean, and it's true too, because back then it's. It's a much bigger deal than it's made to be than it's made to be now, right? Coming into that situation now, where you're going on a date, it's very different. Hey, let's meet for a drink. Let's meet for this.
Yeah.
And what it ends up being is, and I've caught myself doing this too, and I'm guilty of it, man, because I know. And I used to make fun of people for being like, "Oh, you got a checklist and things that you have to have and stuff." And this and that. And I don't know, man. I think when I go out now with a lot of these women, I just think it's my own fault that I'm like, I'm just not there. I've got my mind everywhere else except for that. And I feel like I've built a life now where it's like I can't even imagine having somebody in it, if that makes any sort of sense. And so that's where I think I struggle with, like, finding love and finding that person, because I just am so guarded by it. And you know what I'm saying?
Well, exactly. And that's what I alluded to earlier about good girls and good men who have been just polluted and hurt so bad that they're tiptoeing into anything. That's why it's drinking and just going out and have a good time and get what you
but
can
get.
But
what's the saddest part, man, is, like, how fast people move on.
Man.
When you kind of get burned, right? And, like, well, there was a situation where I burned myself as well, right? And one of those. But you get to a space where, you know, you're like, I don't want to hurt anybody else, and I don't want to feel like that ever again. And I don't want to get hurt. And, like, I thought, like, my biggest thing is, like, even my last relationship, I thought I could trust that person forever.
Yes.
In all fairness, so did she. Yes. There's no, like, but, right. You know, you turn around after, you know, a long relationship with somebody, a meaningful relationship with somebody, and they're like back to their ex-boyfriend like that.
Right.
And you're like, oh, like, I don't even feel like it. And I look back now and it made it so much. It makes it easier for me to even deal with at that point, because you're like, oh, like, I didn't even matter to you that much, because if I did, that would have never even been a thing. You know what I mean? So.
Right.
But yeah, I stay forever guarded with that. Yeah. You know, I'm a total weirdo about that.
Because you put the reason people move on so fast is because they have nothing invested in it. They don't want to have anything invested because they don't want to get hurt, like you were talking about. So if they keep on the perimeters, then you're not going to get hurt. So you keep out on the outside but you can't shut the door completely. I always told my daughter, I said, make sure that you build your life so that you want a man to be in your life, or a certain man to be in your life, not that you need to have a man in your life.
Right.
Because if you need to have that, that's a recipe for disaster. You got to be confident that you can move on, and if you have to, and sustain yourself, you don't have to worry about a place to live or where.
But that, you know what? That's a weird
from.
Thing about women is, like, they always have, not always, I don't want to, sorry, not everyone, but a lot of women always have a backup plan, you know, for when that relationship starts to teeter a little bit.
Can I interject
something? Yeah, absolutely.
Because it fits right in.
Yeah.
This is original Super Pimp joke.
I love this.
How are women like baseball coaches?
I don't know.
Because you always got somebody warming up in the bullpen waiting for you to strike out.
Man, it's so true, though. It's so true, and that's like the saddest part about it. Because it for me, after those two situations, for me, it became like, oh, you know what? Like, let me just focus on me and just being successful and fixing myself. I was so depressed a couple years ago, you know. I still battle with it, but not nearly on that level. But from a dating standpoint, I'll tell you what, my personal life, my professional life, my relationship with my son, my relationship even with my kid's mom, it's not all that bad. I mean, everything is pretty damn good. I have a beautiful apartment. I have awesome business partners. I mean, I'm pretty lucky. I got great friends. But that part is just so hard to navigate, you know? And I think it's really interesting hearing your perspective on that, because you're right. You can't shut the door. And then I've noticed that even within that, when you don't shut the door, and maybe you do let somebody in a little bit, maybe more than you normally would, you know, like, I always find myself like, I'm always pushing away. And it's not even on purpose, man. It's just because I'm just like, oh, like, this space is meant for me. This space isn't meant for you, you know? And then, yeah, man, I'll tell you what, after that last one, man, I fucked myself right up, and I don't think I'll date again.
If the right woman comes along,
yeah, maybe,
and you handle it the right way, and you don't, when you get that little spark, when you start feeling them butterflies, it's easy to fly off the handle,
man.
And forget
right?
everything, forget all the logic, forget all the steps that you should take,
yeah,
in order to give it the best chance as possible. There's nothing guaranteed, but at least you did everything that you could, the steps to make it have the most chance of success that he possibly could have. Instead of jumping in and going, this is it, Dad. Wow, how long have we been dating? 3 months? And I can't tell you how much trouble I can get in.
Well, listen, I'm telling you right now, I'm safe because I have not felt butterflies for anybody in years. Yeah. So I'm be all right. It's been like 4 or 5 years since I've felt butterflies for anybody.
You know, it could happen tomorrow.
Man, that's so funny.
Because you're a good person. You got a good attitude. You mentioned about
my son Carter. Yeah, he's cool.
Right.
Yeah.
Were you ever married?
No. Bree and I never got married.
And that's where men and women are different. When a woman decides, that's it. And nine and a half times out of ten, when somebody will come up to me and say, I just broke up with my girlfriend. I said, let me get this straight here. She broke up with you, right?
Oh, yeah.
So nine times out of ten, it's the woman who.
That's been both for me, too. And it really is the women. And I think it's because, this is my true opinion of it, is because, it's one of two things. The woman values themselves and has been not treated well, mm-hmm. right? Which is... Right. If we're being honest, that's why my most recent ex left. Okay. And then, or you get the opposite of that, which is the woman goes, I found something better. I like this better. Here, goodbye. Let me, you know, and a lot of them create problems within the relationship to give themselves a reason to leave, right? And stuff like that. But I would love to, in general, turn that around somehow where you don't feel like that, or like come up with some sort of situation where, you know, maybe social media isn't used as much on a regular basis. And, you know, and I don't know how that is. I don't have that solution, but I'd be sweet if somebody came up with it, because I feel like it's really fucking our society up.
It really is. That's why there's so many kids that are so screwed up. They don't, they're watching the father's not at home. And a lot of times it's because they're deadbeats, but there's a lot of times that the courts just don't facilitate that, and guys will throw up their hands and say, you know, I'm fighting here to try to be a father to this child,
right,
and give them guidance and love, and you're fighting me on that? Why is it that my only importance was once every 2 weeks for a daughter who has to come up against the vultures and have a self-esteem to know how to handle themselves?
Well, you know what it was presented to me as? It was presented to me as why they drag you guys out, especially the good dads. And this was presented as to keep you in court to spend the money, because your court costs and all that stuff. Because you got to think of that, man. Like, whether it's cops on the side of the highway, people pulling you over because you didn't use your turn signal. It's not because no one's fucking safe.
Yeah.
It's because they want your money, dude. Yeah. It's not like any of these state patrol guys are waking up in the morning and go, oh, I'm going to keep the highway real safe today, guys. Mm-hmm. No, that's not what they're doing. We're going to go out there and pull some people over, write some big tickets so I can make my boss happy and I can get to be a sergeant or a lieutenant. Mm-hmm. And that's of no fault of their own. Yeah, of course, right. Why would you not? I want to get promoted. I want to make more money.
Right.
And that's what makes the world turn. And that's, I think, the super sad part about it is like.
And you are exactly right about that. But that is kind of a superficial thing. And I don't mean it's not.
No, I mean, listen, I don't know if there was any factual evidence behind what I just said. It could have been complete bullshit.
There's a lot of evidence to that. But when I say it's superficial compared to what my experience was and what I found out, having done all the research to get everything I needed to be a father when the courts weren't going to do it for me.
Right.
And, what they really go after, what they really get into, and instead of looking what's best or try to revise the system so it's equal, and so fathers or mothers who get shut out can do their part to bring up healthy children. My mind is racing because this is such a.
Yeah, it's a hot topic.
It's something that's very personal to me. But what they really go after, instead of doing all the things that they should, what they do is they go after that child support. I said, well, the state, man, they just really get at you for that child support. They'll do anything. You know, they'll hunt you down. They'll find out.
Man,
do the research. And why is that? Because the state gets a 2.5% poundage off of every dollar that flows through there. Now you think about how much money is involved in that. Yeah, that's what's important.
That's all they care about. That's all they care about, and that's all they'll ever care about. Mm-hmm. And that's what's sad about it. I mean, that's really what's sad about it. That's all they care about. And they drag people through the mud for that money. They really do. Yeah, that sucks. I remember going through it with my dad. They suspended his license. It's like, oh, you want me to pay child support? No problem at all. Oh, I can't pay it. I can't afford it now. All right, well, go fuck yourself. Now we're going to suspend your license, which is definitely going to make it twice as hard. Yeah. Because now you can't even get to where you'd be going.
Right.
You know, and it's just so, it's so counterproductive, man. It's so counterproductive. But it is, I feel like this, that particular time and that particular era, I don't know if it's changing. I hope I never have to find out if it's changing or not. But the reality of it is, I hope it does change. And I hope if it, I hope it, it shifts in a way where I don't want it to benefit men necessarily more. I just want it to be fair. That's
and
it.
Equity involved.
Yeah.
And men and women have their, have their duties. There is a difference between men and women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's, I think biologically, when we were talking earlier about when a breakup occurs, it's usually the woman who makes a breakup. But I think that's her biological duty by nature, is to pick the correct mate to rear her children.
Right.
So if, you know, not, a lot of them aren't as pure as that in their motives.
Yeah. Know,
this guy's better looking. This guy's got more money or whatever. There's those kind too. But I think biologically that they're there to be the sheriff of their, so to speak, for their children.
I agree with that. I 100% agree with that. And I think that is, yeah, you're right. That's a biological thing.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. And then, and it truly amazes me. I think what amazes me the most, though, about parenting is after I became a father, and I'm sure you can attest to this, it blows me away when you see people that are not good parents or not present or not around. Like, listen, man, I'll never forget this. This is a good story. So I was dating this girl who wanted to leave the state, right? And I was like, listen, I will make this happen. I can make this happen. I could do half my time here. I could do half my time in Cleveland. I will figure it out. I will make it work. Everybody that got involved with it was like, no, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't. And that was a big motivation behind traveling for this podcast, because we travel sometimes for like half the month. And, you know, we're all over the place. We're all over the country. We're doing things. But I'm still a great fucking dad. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so it kind of goes to show you that you can be a great dad under any circumstance. But what blows my mind are the people that have the opportunity to be a great parent, whether it's a mother or a father, and they just fucking throw it away. And they, or they just don't care. And it's just, it just, I can never make sense of that. I can't wrap my head around that at all, because you have people like yourself who at that particular time, you would have gone to the end of the earth to put that together, just to see your daughter. It didn't, and nothing else mattered. At that particular time, you were trying to make her smile, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's all that mattered. That's amazing. Yeah, you should be super proud of yourself for not giving up on that. Because most people just kind of, you know, call it what it is. They're like, ah, you know, a lot of these guys nowadays, you know, they're just having sex recklessly. Ah, we're having a kid, whatever.
Sometimes during these things that go, I go a mile a minute.
No, it's,
and I find myself getting off of completely answering the question the way I want to, and then it morphs into something.
Yeah, who gives a fuck? We're having fun. That's what we do.
I'm very much enjoying.
Yeah, no, we appreciate it. Yeah, no, if you, that's what it's all about. The tangents are fun. Talking shit's fun. You know, being able to do our thing. So, like, even like a night like tonight, I mean, bro, it's Friday night.
Right.
Right. So, like, this is, I mean, you're primed. You're ready to go, dude. Look at you.
That's right. See, I got the plan.
So what's the layout for tonight?
So,
let's hear the lowdown. This is the, actually, everybody, you should be honored. You're going to hear a little sneak peek into what Super Pimp's doing on this particular Friday night. He's going to have to mix it up so y'all don't know where he's at the next time. But
and there's some that don't understand this. and it's understandable that they don't understand. But many do, is that tonight is Friday night, and I'm doing this, which is fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming. Seriously,
it's my honor to be on your program. I've heard a lot about it.
I appreciate that.
And anybody who hasn't listened to it before, I hope that this brings new listeners to you.
Yeah, I appreciate
as
that
as well, because you do a good job. Because what's happened here is that I've done a lot of interviews, and I've done a lot of radio shows and podcasts and everything, and so the story has kind of got out there.
Yeah.
You know, so we're going in, and I was telling my former agent, because we were having a power meeting before.
Yeah, of
before
course.
This, and that's why I ran a little long.
getting it out there. You know that. You know that. But you and your agent were having a meeting?
Yeah, we were having a meeting, and I knew, like I said, it was Friday night, and I said, I hope that I can, something I can say, because I don't like to direct the person's program, what their questions are, anything else. I want the, because it's their show, and I'm here to serve them, is the way I, you in this case. But I said, I wonder what I could say or do to kind of get it off the normal things, like the questions I get.
Oh, God, I'm sure you just get
so
the same.
So we've got it really into a more depth about, maybe a little more about who I am and not just the story, because there's been a couple of documentaries. There's been cover of Scene Magazine. Cleveland Magazine just did an article.
I saw that.
All kind of gets a little redundant about the story, although it has to be, I guess, brought up to the newer people.
I get it. It gets brought up. But at the same time, when you find depth within somebody, like, well, here's what I do. I try, it doesn't really matter who I interview in that sense, but I always try to humanize whoever I'm interviewing.
Right.
Right. So, like, even I've done some ridiculously famous people. I've done some regular people, you know, and I've done everywhere in between. You know, we've sat in the beautiful Cleveland, Ohio, in the flats right here, and Mark and I have sat in the middle of Compton, California with the Bloods and done a podcast. And that's true. But you always try to humanize people, because when you're able to humanize people, you're able to have real dialogue, right? You're able to be I can actually talk to you. You're a friend. You're a regular human being, right? And what makes you that? Right. And that makes more sense to me, to be able to put people on that level, because it makes me more approachable. It makes me more fun to be around. And that's kind of the goal of this podcast. What we like to talk about is stuff like that, where you're, you know, digging through the trenches, trying to become somebody for the sake of your daughter. Right. And then you find happiness in making others happy. And then within that, you know, it kind of sprouted itself. And then it's taken on a kind of a life of its own in a way. But you're still able to control what the narrative is and how it is, based on your humility and based on how you approach things. So do you drink at all?
I just cut back at the beginning of the summer.
Haven't we all, Super Pimp? We've all cut back.
I'm not an addictive person, so I've never had a problem with drugs
right.
or alcohol or anything. I never, you know, I might have had a little glaucoma that I had to treat, and then I thought it was baking powder.
Hey, you know what? That's all right. You know? Yeah, I hate when that happens, man. That's the worst mix-up ever, man. I know. I hate when I snort baking soda when I'm headed to the bathroom. Damn it. That's the third time today. Yo, that was the best diet I was ever on when I was doing that shit, though. I'm not going to lie to you, man. I'm serious. I've never been skinnier in my damn life.
The only reason I ever did that was I never drank to make my happiness,
right?
Or do whatever else to make my happiness.
When you were depressed, though, were you drinking to like suppress it at all? Like when you were real depressed, like late 90s and stuff like that?
No more than what I normally did.
Okay. So you've always been like that.
That's a good question, because I never really thought of it. But yeah, a lot of people fall into that syndrome. They get sloppy.
I did. You won't even see alcohol in my house. I don't even have it in my house. I'm down to go have a couple drinks and stuff like that every once in a while. But I ruined my whole fucking life with drugs and alcohol. So I just don't do it. Yeah.
Well, that's good that you were able to overcome it. But like I was saying, I drank to enhance my happiness, not to make my happiness.
I get it.
And the same with whatever other things I might have indulged in.
What's your drink of choice?
It was bourbon on the rocks.
Right.
It was the choice. And so when I quit, when I made the decision to quit, it wasn't because I had a problem. It was because I figured I maybe only have maybe 50 or 60 more years left. So I want to make sure that those are healthy.
Yeah.
The healthiest possible. Because I beat my body up enough for all these years.
Oh, I'm sure. The parties you've been to have just got to be unbelievable.
So I find myself, I don't miss it. I didn't quit completely, because like when I'm with my brother or with some friends and we get together and
I'll have a couple of drinks.
I'll throw some back. But it used to be part of the routine that I would go out and I would have, because I'm a super pimp, it would be a full glass of bourbon.
Oh my God.
With a little ice chip that somebody that fell into the bottom of the of the ice bin and put that in there. And so there was probably 5, 6, 7 of those, and whatever somebody was saying, hey, let's do a shot, let me buy you a shot, whatever they were doing, I would do it with them. But I always had the military discipline.
See,
I never let myself get sloppy.
You took the next question. I was going to say, what's Super Pimp's worst moment? That was going to be my next question.
You know, that would be a toughie. It would be worst moments was having the people that meant so much to me in my life pass. So every time that happened, that was equally almost as bad. As I alluded to earlier, that my dad had 7 brothers and sisters. And they were all beautiful, wonderful people, had great families, and were a very good example for anybody. To have them in my life and then them to be gone, to never be able to talk to them again, or never be in their presence, or feel their aura and their warmth and their love. Can't go to Walmart and buy it. You know, and it's a sense of loss. Those are the worst moments in my life.
I understand that. I feel that. Yeah, that's never hard. I go to therapy once a week still. I love therapy, and I recommend to anybody that, you know, needs to go. I found a great therapist. I'm super lucky. But you talk about you're older than me. I know it's probably hard to tell. Yeah, no. Sorry. I'm not trying to put an age on anybody. But
the problem is trying to find somebody who's older than me.
Yeah. That's what we're leading into now. But I feel like at a younger age, you almost mourn the loss of people that are still alive, but they're just not part of your life anymore, right? As well of those in that situation that you're in, you know? So, like, I understand exactly what that is. I've had a couple people pass away, one particular that was super close to my cousin, but, yeah, there's some others, man. And you're right. There's nothing heavier than that even that thought that I could just never call them and just tell them I love them again, or, you know, even apologize if there was something to apologize about. It's no longer what it could have been or what it should have been. And yeah, that's an amazing point you just made, because that is that's exactly what that is. That's heavy, and that's always going to be dark, and it's always going to be a tough space to sit there and occupy.
Right, because sometimes you really don't appreciate it to the fullest extent that was given to you.
No, not at all.
The gift that was given to you. And you assume that it's always going to be there.
Oh, you never think, why would you think it's going to end?
Yeah.
Right? And then it does, and you're like, fuck.
If it does, it's like your own death. You know, you think, well, you know what's going to happen, but it ain't going to be today.
No.
That's the way you look at it. It's always something that's going to be in the future.
Yeah, I think a lot of it for me is like, even when I was like doing a lot of like drugs and alcohol at that time in my life after I went through a bad breakup. And so like, and I ruined, listen, not just that relationship, but all of them around me after that, right? Because I was just like, fuck the world, you know, for a good 6-8 months. And majority of those relationships have never been repaired. Not for a lack of not wanting to or trying to, but, you know, you damage a relationship bad enough, they're not going to have any interest in being around you anymore, and that's understandable. You know, and that's where that point comes from, kind of. And that, I think, like, it's one of the biggest lessons I've taken from you in this podcast is to look for happiness within other people, because that does make me happy. I understand that. I understand how you can do that. And I think that's a very, very valuable lesson, a very valuable message that you bring across to everybody.
And it really is, because, you know, I've had people come back to me and say, you know, I tried that the other day, and the reaction I got was, you know, it doesn't always work, and it might not work right at that moment, but that person will think about what you said all day long, and they might think about it for weeks, because, you know, people don't realize that there's people who haven't smiled in weeks or maybe a month, and never felt like they had anything to smile about, or that they were a ghost or a shadow. A lot of people feel like they're a shadow, that nobody notices them. Because, again, probably because of social media, you got all these people showing, you know, got great looking people on social media, off on vacation,
yeah,
and the clothes and cars and everything, and here's you of modest means, and nobody's looking at you because yeah. you're not one of these beautiful people, so to speak.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's so shallow. Yeah. It's such a shallow way to approach things. And I'm guilty of it too, man. I mean, of course, like, yeah, that's it. Yeah, man, it's an incredible statement, though, for you to say that. Because I feel like, truthfully, if everybody did just spend, like, even one time a day intentionally going out of their way to make somebody mm-hmm. else feel better, I feel like a lot of relationships that I had in the past would have been so much better. Things would have been better, you know, and that's a great thing. And mm-hmm. so is there, like, a retirement date for Super Pimp, or is this forever?
Well, here's my story on retirement.
That's how we're going to caption this. Super Pimp talks retirement.
Well, you'll see.
We're going to get everybody watching this shit. Well, that's so funny.
You'll see the retirement really won't be part of this. It will, but it's not going to be the crux or the core of this.
Yeah, yeah.
I always thought, being a free spirit that I've been, that you should get your pension when you're 21 and go to work when you're 40. And pay it back while you're still young. You got the money. You can spend it. You're still
I'd never
healthy.
Be able to pay that back, bro.
Yeah. You know, you get your pension, but if you wanted to do something else, that would be fine. But you always knew that you had that money, and you could do whatever you wanted to. You could make more money or lay around and drink beer and chase women. So I thought that, like I said, you should be able to collect it. I couldn't get anybody to go along with it.
Yeah, I haven't heard of it happening.
Yeah. So I'll know when I'm retired now is when that zipper goes over my nose. You know, again, it was retirement was something was going to come. Is there going to be a time when I'm not going to be working anymore?
Right.
And I should plan ahead for it. But that's way in the future.
For you then, so tonight, you're going to go out tonight, right?
Is it Friday night?
It's Friday night.
Am I incognito? So
that's what I'm trying to say. That's what I'm trying to say, though. Are there, like, I mean, are there ever Friday nights you miss? I mean, shit happens, but I'm saying, like, are you ever sitting there going, you know, fuck this tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
There are nights, but what happens normally, think about FOMO.
Oh, you get FOMO.
I get FOMO.
Oh, no shit.
Because I know even if I'm feeling crappy at home, that I know that once I get out.
Oh, you'll be feeling good.
I'm going to be, because I liken myself to a dry sponge. So on those nights that you're talking about, I'm like a dried up sponge. And said, I don't want to do squat. I don't want nobody to see me because I'm a miserable, low life human being tonight. I don't want to be here with me, but I got no choice. But then when I go out that the same night and that first person says, Super Pimp, how you doing, Super Pimp? I got to take a picture. And I'm so glad you came out tonight. And all of a sudden that sponge, like you put water in that sponge. Every time that happens, it just expands. And then all of a sudden, I'm back.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing.
Full bloom.
Yeah, but that's amazing that those same people that you love to make happy are the same ones that help you bring you out of your shell when you're not doing 100%.
Oh, exactly. That's what I said. I feel like I get it back twice. And it's a phenomenal thing what's happening now. I make my living. I get paid to go to parties. I do charity work that I get paid for, unless it's one of my favorite charities. Then I do it for nothing.
Somebody needs to make a Super Pimp porno. I'll pay for it. I'll literally fund the entire production. I've got directors. I got everything you need. You ever decide to do that? I am your guy, 100%. I don't want to watch, but I'll pay for it. Do you know how much money you'd make on OnlyFans Super Pimp?
I've never been on a dating site in my life.
OnlyFans ain't a dating site. OnlyFans isn't a dating site. You don't want OnlyFans is like you know what OnlyFans is or no?
I know what it is.
You got a subscription.
But I kind of put it somewhat in the same category. People tell me I've never been on like Tinder or I don't even know what the names of any of the other ones
Bumble,
are.
Bumble, Hinge,
any of those. But people will tell me that there's a ton of people who use my picture as their profile shot.
I've seen them too. Yeah. Girls will take pictures with you. And usually it's two girls on either side. So you have to scroll farther because you don't know which girl it is that you're looking at. Right. But you know, they, There was Super Pimp. That means they're certified, baby. They're good to go, dude.
You were talking about the porno.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's, I don't know, a little embarrassing. I can't put my finger on it, but I got offered a commercial.
Yeah, you. I bet you did.
Are you ready for what
I'm
this commercial
I'm fucking ready.
Was? You ever heard of Enhance?
Oh, yeah, the penis enhancer. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. No doubt about it.
I got offered that commercial.
Yes.
So I thought they were joking at first. So I said, well, am I the before or the after?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you, what did they say?
I would never.
You would have been before and after. You would have been before. You, man, you know, I've actually heard of a couple people. I was talking with my friend, Chloe Caroline. Shout out, Chloe. She's the best. And she was telling me she got a sponsor for like a dildo sponsor or something or whatever.
Yeah.
She's like, I turned it down or whatever. And then, like later that night or like, was it that night or was like the next time I went to LA? Whatever. I was out to dinner with her and I was like, you need to start an OnlyFans. And I said, we'll call it Blowy instead of Chloe. And she's going to fucking hate me for posting this, but it's so funny. I had to do it, dude. Sorry.
So I, of course I,
Blowy Caroline OnlyFans coming soon, everybody.
They offered me good money, but I turned it down. I could, at that, that was quite a few years ago, and I'm thinking, and I'm still waiting for my big chance, you know, the big breakthrough. If it doesn't come, that's fine, because I've had a great run at this. This is awesome.
Here's what you need to do. This is my opinion. This is not necessarily a fact, but I'm going to give you my opinion whether you want it anyway or either way. I think you doing podcasts like this is amazing. What are your thoughts on traveling outside of Cleveland to expand Super Pimp? Because yeah. I want Super Pimp to be fucking super national, baby. Yeah. I want everybody to know who Super Pimp is.
I do, because I feel to how fortunate I've been in my life to have good family and good friends and everything that I have. I have a message for people that will do them well in their lives. And I think that message ought to get out. And well, people will ask me, well, what is your goal with the, on how many followers you get? What's your goal on that? And this and that. What is the end game to this?
Right, right, right.
The end game is to have the power to reach as many people as I can.
Yeah, with the positivity that you possess.
Exactly. And that's the end game of what I do and why I do it.
You are a prime example of how human beings feed off other human beings, right? Is that something that like you're hyper aware of just in your regular day stuff as well? Like, is it kind of an all the time thing for you, whether you're wearing your suit or not?
Yes, yes. Like I said, if I could be in the Dollar General store,
yeah,
and anybody I meet, or I'll make it a point to talk to somebody. If I'm in an elevator, I might crack a joke. Or, you know, make some kind of contact with
yeah.
you. And
is there a particular person that you've ever complimented to that sticks in your head that you were like, wow, like I really like made that person's day and it was so unintentional to maybe even do so. You were just doing your thing.
I've had, and this is very, very moving to me because, you know, there's the parts of it that are, I don't want to say superficial, but it's kind of a lighter feeling good about that day and bringing that smile. And it's because to see with as soon as they see me, I mean, walking down here.
Oh, I'm sure. I know
people in the car stopping their cars, snapping pictures out of the car, but to see that smile on their face and everything. But I've had numerous people come up to me crying, physically crying in a club. And saying, I finally found you. And I can't tell you what you've done for your example and your words. The time that you talked to me for 10 or 15 minutes in a club.
Yeah.
That you took a time when nobody else was paying attention. And you took the time to talk with me. And it turned me around. Just that's and they were actually just showing their emotions.
Yeah, because it feels so good. It's so raw at that point.
Wow. I said, that's... all I need is one of those to justify everything that I do,
right.
And but I get it all the time in some level, like I say, either a passing thing or something as deep as what I just described.
Yeah.
And everywhere in between.
Yeah, that's got to be kind of heavy, too.
No, because it's real heavy.
Yeah, because you're sitting there, and you're doing your thing, and you're doing it. You even said, which is a reasonable thing to say, you do it in kind of a, you said it seems kind of selfish. But, yeah. Like, you do that, and then you feel like that movement that you may be making somebody, and it's like, oh, that makes all of this worth it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I get my 5% haters. Whenever you're in the limelight, you get your haters.
Of course. I love the haters, though, man. Free press. Yeah. I fucking love people that talk shit. I adore the people that go, oh, fuck Roger Barry and his podcast. And then I see them out, and they're just dapping me up. It's like, dude, you know.
Well,
yeah, that's how everybody's got haters. I get it.
I feel fortunate because most of the time I'll make a joke about it.
Well, what's a hater say to you, dude? What's a hater?
No, I have people come right up and say, I don't like you.
Damn.
Just something really rude.
Really?
And I'll say, well, you know what, man? Says, some days I don't like my damn self.
Yeah, that's how that goes sometimes.
It disarms them. It's like they want, they are so, the way I look at it, they're so unhappy in their lives. I mean, there might be somebody I don't like, but I'm certainly not going to take any time out of my life to make their, to take away something from their life to say something about it. You know, who am I?
Yeah, it's not going to make it's not going to make you any better. It's not going to make you feel better to put them down. I get it.
Exactly.
I'm sure you got some mean roasts in you, though. I'm sure you do. I'm sure you've got them sitting there ready to fire off, and you're just biting that tongue sometimes.
Well, the first couple of years, there was six fights.
Oh, you
six
got...
Six physical fights.
You got in fights.
Yes.
Because pimping ain't easy.
Because they wouldn't back off.
Oh, I believe it.
And it came down to physical shove or just something that... Just
everybody's got their line.
Right.
Yeah.
Growing up in Lorain, which was it was a good town to grow up in, but really good town. It had steel mills. It had American Shipbuilding. It had Fruhoff Trailer Company. We all went at 18 years old. You could go out and get a job like that, making $20 an hour in today's money. With health benefits and the whole thing. We all owned new cars. A new car was $3,500. I bought a Mustang Mach 1. It was $3,500.
Damn.
I got the rally package, which was the raised white letters on it, and it looked like a cockpit on the inside. And that cost me an extra $300. So I'm in $3,800 to a brand new Ford Mustang, and I'm making $20 an hour.
So what is something that maybe not everybody would necessarily guess about Super Pimp? Maybe they wouldn't know about you. And give us a little tidbit here. Come, just something.
Well, I think that how people know me and everything, or although the most people don't know me, but they know me, if you know what I mean, is the fact that I did, I performed in off-Broadway musicals.
Really?
For probably a good 2 or 3 years before entering the military. I was in West Side Story and Sound of Music and a few different Broadway musicals. And as a matter of fact, the first one I ever did was West Side Story at the Huntington Playhouse.
No way. And no way. Did you really?
Yes.
What year was that?
That was 18. But let's say I was just...
Abraham Lincoln was president, everybody.
Abraham Lincoln was retired.
That's what they call that, retired.
But I was just out of high school, my first summer out of high school. And how I got into it was that my sister took tap dancing lessons since she was like 4 years old. And I used to drive her to her dancing lessons. And the woman who gave her the dancing lessons was a young woman in her maybe early 20s.
Okay.
And absolutely beautiful young lady with a dancer's body. And I was 16. At the time, I would take her to it, and I would always make sure that I took her down because she gave the lessons in her basement, and I made sure I escorted my sister all the way down so I could get a good eyeful.
Yeah, of course, what's going on down there.
And she would always say, well, you know, you ought to really come and take lessons. I'd really love to have your handsome self here. You know, just playing the role.
Of course.
Yeah, you know, and she gets paid by the student, you know, so to speak. But
so do you. So do you, pimping it easy, baby. You know, who get paid by the student, dog.
And I said, no, I can't do that. I played. I was a halfback on the high school football team at that time.
Oh, yeah. Okay, okay.
So I finally gave in. I said, well, I'll come take a couple of lessons.
Right.
It was Modern Jazz was the venue that I was using. And so I would go down there and I would take the lessons. And we had our first review. And I'd have to duck out of football practice early and make up excuses to get to my lessons.
Yeah.
So I got found out by the team I was going to dance.
So you're skipping. Oh, my gosh. How bad did you get picked on for that one?
It was merciless.
Oh, I believe that.
It was merciless.
I bet you had some sick touchdown dances, though.
I bet what?
Some sick touchdown dances. You're probably ready to go, man. You're probably ready to go with that. Another thing I want to talk to you about, you were in the military.
Right. Well, I just wanted to put the wrap on that.
Yeah, put the wrap on it.
The wrap on that is that we had our first recital, so to speak. So I was one of the two or three guys that she gave lessons to. The rest of them are all really attractive girls.
Yeah.
So they decided that they were going to come and heckle the crap out of me at this rehearsal. So they got all the front row seats in this performance, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so they saw these girls in these costumes. I was the most popular man.
Oh, I believe that. I believe that.
I never caught any crap other than, who's this one? Or,
I bet. They're probably like, oh, I see what you were doing, bro. Yeah. Okay.
So like I said, I did that for about two or three years. And then I got, I went to the military.
Okay, and what were you, what branch of the military were you in?
I was a captain in the Army.
Okay.
For 5.5 years. I went to Combat Engineer OCS, stands for Officer Candidate School, and graduated from that. And they didn't have a military intelligence officer candidate school. So what they had to do was they took our combat engineer class, split it in half, and said, you're military intelligence now. And this half went on to be combat engineers.
No way.
So I was put in the military intelligence side, and then I had to go to a special schooling for electronic warfare and cryptology and all the things that were related to military intelligence for another 3 or 4 months.
How was that back then in comparison, like the military, you know, the technology and stuff, learning it back then, you compare it to what they have now?
Well, I can illustrate that very well because when I... my first job in the military was I was a company commander of 300 men at 20 years old in Okinawa.
Okay.
And it was a military intelligence group. And when I came back from Okinawa, I got assigned to the National Security Agency at Fort Meade, Maryland. That big spy operation. But I was the only military in this department, and everybody else was civilians. So my job, part of my job, it's unclassified, and it's not really getting into any technicalities of it, but my job was I would watch the Russian fighters on the radar. They would always test, because coming over Alaska was the shortest route to attack the United States. So they were always testing our systems to see how that was going. And how alert we were and how we did it and what our response times were and stuff like that. So I was watching these little dots.
How crazy is that to think about, like what you're watching? When you think about it now, like how crazy is it to think that you're watching literally threats?
Especially at that young.
I believe it.
Something like that. But you can imagine, here's what you see them in old movies, these round radar screens with a green background. And here's these little dots. That's all they were, little dots. Now I'm sure that they've got, you know, 3D photo, whatever they call it, where they can reconstruct the plane from
forever away.
Actually show what kind it is and a picture of it and the whole nine. But that was in the 70s, so that was pretty crude to compare to today's technology, for sure. So I did that for a year and a half before, when the Vietnam War ended and they didn't need the officers anymore, and they gave me a good severance pay, and I wanted to make the military a career, but they didn't need all the officers, because officers were getting killed, unfortunately. Like,
how'd that affect your mental health in the military?
It was difficult. I left on a bus from the Broadway building in Lorraine at 19 years old with about 25 or 30 other guys on the bus. And I became friends with five of them on the bus. They were sitting next to me or in vicinity, and we got to be friends. We never knew each other before that. And I was the only one out of that group of five that came back.
No way.
And I went through basic with them. I went through advanced individual training with them. And then they got sent off to Vietnam. And I was pissed about that, because that's why I chose combat engineer for my military occupational specialty. Because when you're young and dumb, it's John Wayne, and you're fighting for your country, and just give me a couple of guys off the block, and we'll go over and clear this mess up, and that bravado.
You probably look back at it now, and I mean, obviously, I think a lot of people go into it with ignorance, not really realizing what they're getting into, the invincibility of being younger, things like that. But that had to be a real humbling experience at that age.
It was terrible. Because I got called to be at all their funerals, to be pallbearers at their funerals, and with the families, and because I knew the families, because the families would come on family visiting days, and I'd get to know them because I was friends with them in training and stuff. So it was very difficult, and I've lost touch with a lot of them. I'm sure a lot of them have passed, the parents of the people, but it was a nasty, rotten thing, but it taught me that although this is the greatest country in the world, our leaders are not always the best of the crop.
No, I mean, we're look at what we're dealing with right now. I mean, and that's just the sad, that's the scary part about the situation we're in. It's hard raising a kid right now. I don't know what to do, man, half the time. Especially in the political environment. I'm not a political guy. I don't even vote. People always tell me, like, oh, well, you can't have an opinion because you don't vote. But, like, my thing is this, is I just don't want to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. But I also acknowledge, like, and have a lot of respect for those that are in the armed forces and that are fighting for us and all those things. But, I think for you to have gone through something at such a young age like that was so impactful for you with, your friends.
I feel very fortunate that I didn't have to. Because my friends that came back, not the ones I was talking about, but other ones that came back, were never the same when they faced combat. They were just shells of themselves.
How could you be the same?
Yeah, you can't.
How could you be the same?
If I had to go through what they went through, the traumas that they went through in actually seeing combat like that, you'd see. Seeing their buddy blowing to bits in front of them, and the mush that used to be their face. Awful.
Yeah, it's got to be terrible.
So I tell people now, I said, they want to join the military. I said, you make sure that you're going for a good reason. Vietnam was not a good reason.
No.
And I respect the hell, because I could have been one of those guys, because that was my era of going through, of being one of them. Because we all went over because the government would never tell us to go to an unfair war that was not a threat to the United States. How was Vietnam ever a threat to the United States? It was the fact that Dwight Eisenhower, I think was the last five-star general, the commander-in-chief of the whole of France and the whole Allied force that beat the Germans and the Japanese. He said in his farewell speech, beware of the military-industrial complex. And he was talking about the money-making that goes on by war. That's why we're in perpetual war.
And fucking everybody, you got to listen. If you haven't watched the movie War Dogs, it's true. But war is a business.
It is a business.
War is a business. Man, man. I can't tell you how happy I am that you came tonight. So I'm gonna wrap this up. I got two questions for you.
Sure.
First question is going to be a question I'm going to ask you, and the second question is the one I end every podcast with. So the first question is, Super Pimp Man, where do you go from here?
I had my night planned out tonight, and this is a typical Friday night except for the being on this extravaganza of a podcast, soon to be international.
It better be. It better be. It better be. We need a lot, that's for sure. We need some more love.
So that put the spice in there for the night, for the beginning of the night. But where I go from here is where I go every Friday night, Kent.
Oh, you're going to Kent. Kent Wright, Kent Reeds, Kent State, baby. You're going to Kent. You're going to go turn it up in Kent.
Yep. I like to be with my own age group.
I don't blame you, man. I don't blame you. You got to take me out one of these days. Super pimp.
I have such a following in Kent. It's unbelievable. There are any college town, I can go into a college town and in one night they'll be looking at me.
Oh, I believe it.
Here's who's this guy in the suit and a day or two older than us. What's he doing in here? And you hear the little whispers and stuff like that. But then I just be me. And it just all turns around. By the end of the night, I'm dancing with everybody and laughing and having a good time. And I have I love the Kent students and they love me. And it's a love fest and I cannot not go every Friday night. Come hell or high crap.
You're going.
I'm going.
Let's go. I love that. So get ready, Kent. Kids going down tonight. All right, so I always finish my podcast with this question. It's a two-part question, and it is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy would you consider yourself to be? And if it's not a 10, what do you think you could do to get yourself to a 10 or closer to a 10?
Well, I think that it's a 9, and it's a 9 because when I think that things are going bad and some superficial crap that, you know, the car won't start or I got to buy a battery and I didn't want to put out the money for it. I think, you know, crap like that I'm fretting about, I stop and I go, is my daughter healthy? Is my brother and sister healthy? Is my family healthy and happy? Yeah, wish. I got everything.
You have everything. You're the most believable 9 I've ever heard. I've interviewed a lot of people. A lot of people, and Mark will tell you the same thing. People will tell us, oh, we're happy, we're happy, we're happy. You're the only one I really actually, there's been maybe one or two others that I actually believe, but I really believe you're a 9. Yeah. I mean, I really do.
And for the second part of your question as to what could make it a 10, is for me to fully appreciate, be able to have the ability to fully appreciate what I have and what's bringing me that happiness.
Yeah.
So it could continue to be. I don't want to, 10 is to never, if I could be assured that I would never lose my appreciation of how lucky I am.
Yeah. What a magical answer, everybody. I mean, do you guys just listen to that? That's amazing because you are a true man of the people. Mm-hmm. And that makes all the difference. And that's what's created this. I don't really call it a character. I consider it to be an extension of who you are.
It really is.
Yeah.
It's 20, you know, people have a way of looking through you after a while. If it's not you, it'll die.
100%.
And 1999 is going on almost 25 years.
Good for you.
And when I think of my 15 minutes was going to be up, and I think about all the things and experiences I've been able to have that I would have never had if this all wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And it was all created by the fans. I had nothing to do with any of this. Not the name had nothing to do with me, Super Pimp. It started out as Rod Stewart, because I wore my hair spiky with the blonde spikes.
I was talking to somebody earlier today, and they literally said, they're like, yeah, we always used to like know him as Rod Stewart.
Yes.
There was someone, and he's like 50, mid-50s right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's well, fucking funny.
Early. You're trying to date
listen,
me
I'm just letting you know what's going on. Listen, man, I'm not here to lie to you.
From Rod Stewart, then one day people started calling me Super Pimp. I had nothing to do with that. It just morphed into it. And then everybody was calling me that. And now it's morphing again into Mr. Cleveland.
Oh, I like that, too. I like that, too.
Because I mentioned earlier that my sister is my moral compass. She says, how are you going to do these charity events and do the other things that you want to do with that pimp thing hanging over your head? I said, you know, it brings a smile. I can't. Every time, Super Pimp.
But that's also the part of it, though, that you where you... It's that laugh, that human laugh, or that human acknowledgement of what it is and what the outfit means and the joy you're bringing people, right? Stuff like that.
Right.
Like, I love what you embody, and I don't think you should change a fucking thing.
I can't.
Yeah.
It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the...
The people.
To the fans.
I have trouble saying that. You're so humble with it, man. I'm a fan. Yeah. You have fans. Don't ever let anybody tell you you don't have fans. That's not true. You have a lot of fans. Listen, man, if you can walk around Cleveland, Ohio, and have people everywhere you go, man, everywhere you go, Super Pimp, Super Pimp, Super Pimp. Come on, man. Yeah. You got fans, 100%.
But the term fans, I guess.
I know.
I think that
you're just such a humble guy, though. That's why, right? The humility is really where that's at. But if you didn't have fans, this wouldn't have never. This still wouldn't be going on 25 years later.
Yeah, that's the
truth.
That's true. And the other beauty about it is that now. Because back then, when the times that you were talking about, when it was Rod Stewart and when it was first starting,
yeah,
those people were in their 20s. Now, they're in their middle to late 40s.
Yep.
And now I'm their link to their 20s days. So when I get invited to their parties, and they go, and their friends are at that 40-somethings and early 50s, and they go, and they all come up with these stories with these bitches. You remember when you met me?
Yeah,
and
we
were doing this? And
it's
going
to be hard
those
for
days.
You to remember that, though, some of these people, I'm sure you fucking don't. Do you meet so many people?
It's very difficult to do that. And I wish I had a photographic memory so I could, because I don't want anybody to ever feel that they're not special to me, because every person who comes up,
I'd love to have like a Facebook page where it's like post your picture with Super Pimp. I bet you, you know how many pictures would probably go up there? It'd be fucking crazy. But no, man, thank you so much for coming. Mm. And you are always welcome back here anytime. This is amazing. Everybody, if you want to check out Super Pimp, first of all, we can go on to his Instagram. Hold on. It's at Super Pimp, right?
Yeah, at the real R-E-A-L.
At Real Super Pimp, at Real Super Pimp, Mike Toth over on Instagram. And then you also do have the superpimp.com.
Which is my website.
Which is your website that you go to. Is there anywhere else that we could find you?
I'm on Facebook. All you got to do is go to Mike Toth on Facebook.
Yep.
And I'm also on Cameo.
You know what you are? I saw that on your website here that you're doing Cameo as well. Okay.
And
we'll post the links to these in our descriptions on stuff so everybody can click on them. And then, so we got Instagram, we got your website, we got your Cameo, and then soon coming, hopefully an OnlyFans and a porno.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're going to find out soon, guys.
But the last thing I want to clear up on here is... Like I've said about my sister and about my name and everything. Mm-hmm. So I had to do a little twist on it to clean it up a little bit. So it's on my card, and it explains that pimp means to promote. And what I promote is the good life, good family, good friends, and good times.
Oh, I like that. Oh, and everybody, that's Super Pimp. And come to Cleveland if you haven't found him already. Check him out on Instagram. Check out his website. Make him some money on Cameo, and you'll be back. We'll be hearing more from you.
Thank you so much for it's been
an honor. You're always welcome, man. Thank you.